Now 11 minutes past 9 Central African time, coming out of the address there by the President, updates on what is the latest in terms of the COVID response, as well as the aftermath of looting and insurrection or planned insurrection here in South Africa, and lots of analysis and critical analysis, as you'd like, as well, that could come for the response of the government, and perhaps putting a positive spin, as the president usually does on this. But I think the mood in the country requires obviously taking firm steps to reassure citizens, to reassure the economy, but also accountability from within. And listening to that entire address, I'm sure many people would echo a kind of sentiment that there isn't a kind of accountability from within that comes through any type of these addresses. And essentially, when it is the government itself and inefficiencies within the government itself that lead us to the events of the like that we saw 2 weeks ago, is it even fathomable that we can expect anything of the like from the government? But that's just a subjective comment at this point in time, but I'm sure a lot more will be said, and all eyes are going to be on how words are going to be matched with action. We focusing on the aftermath of the looting in various areas of KwaZulu-Natal. Now, one has been a serious focus on the central Durban region, Pietermaritzburg as well, but the scale of the destruction has been all across KwaZulu-Natal. So I'm looking today on the south coast, so looking to areas such as Amzinthu a bit later on to get a first-hand report of the aftermath of the looting on the local economy, and how will rebuilding go from there. And I'm looking at the moment at northern KwaZulu-Natal, and that's on our radar for the next few minutes with Imran Kika. He's the member of the provincial parliament, or the provincial legislature in KwaZulu-Natal, with the Democratic Alliance. Dr. Kika, good to speak to you. Assalamu alaikum and welcome.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullah, brother Ibrahim, and assalamu alaikum to your listeners. Jazakallah for the opportunity.
I understand in terms of the oversight role that you play, that you did an extensive trip through many areas in northern KwaZulu-Natal. Just give us an idea of the scope of your trip.
At the outset, Brother Ibrahim, you were making some subjective views at the beginning or introduction of this segment of your program. I must say I agree with you completely. And I must add to that to say that, you know, all the community members that stood up during that time to protect the communities, may Allah Ta'ala reward every single one of them. We want to thank them and express appreciation to them. And also condolences to all those who've lost their lives during this unrest and insurrection or upheaval or whatever you want to call it. Having said that, you're right, we do have an oversight role to play. As part of the legislature program, we were allocated to particular municipalities to go and have a look. I, of course, extended it a little beyond that on my own. It was a very quick trip given all the uncertainty. So I'm here in Newcastle. I can tell you about Newcastle. So I left here probably quite late on Thursday evening last week. What I mean quite late, I left Newcastle at around 8 and I only reached Ulundi that night at about 11:30, having stopped in Utrecht on the way, Freyheid, passed through a place called Denny Dalton on the way, and then of course to Ulundi. In the morning we had a look at Ulundi, we then went to Nongoma, from Nongoma to Pongola. From Pongola I went to Freyheid again, Dundee to Ladysmith, Ladysmith back to Newcastle. So it was quite a quick roundabout. but it was enough to tell me what was going on, what were the responses from government, how local government was behaving or responding, and then, of course, what community members were doing. So I must say that of all of these towns, the worst affected that I saw, in fact, I think other than three, perhaps even four businesses in the town of Nongoma, everything else was destroyed. In fact, having spoken to that mayor and the municipal manager of Nongoma, which is a small little town between Freyheit and Ulundi, 50 kilometers more or less either way, you know, the mayor of the town said to us that the police were completely ineffective. They were unable to respond. They neither had the equipment such as tear gas, rubber bullets. You know, they could not manage crowds. They were utterly, and the word that I often prefer to use to describe these things is they were just feckless. But that was his opinion. Interestingly, later on that morning, we met with the commander of the police station in that town, who confirmed to us exactly what the mayor said. He went so far as to say that with some of his officers, he stopped six pakis from entering Nongoma and, you know, tried to disarm those people. They were heavily armed. And when he tried to disarm them and stop them, they basically outnumbered them and outpowered them both in terms of firepower and numbers. And he was brave enough to tell us that his officers literally ran away from there. He was left alone, and so he had to give them all back the baki keys that he had confiscated, trying to prevent them from getting into Nongoma and allow them to go. It was either that or his life. So it had become that bad. And the mayor then said to us that, you know, he reached a point where he decided that the police are not going to assist in this matter. The police said to us that they did not have any rubber bullets. They had to drive to Pongola, which is some 100 kilometers away, to borrow some, because they had 1,000 rounds only. And from those 1,000 rounds, they gave them 100 of the inferior quality ones and told them that, look, this is all we can give you because we need some for ourselves in case we need them. We brought it back. There was no public order policing. And so they were completely naked, so to speak. And what happened was the mayor of Nongoma said he had to take control of his town with his traffic officers, the few of them that were there, and the community members that he had mobilized. And he says within hours, he was able to stop everything, disperse the crowds, and take control of his town. But, of course, it was too late. In that, I know, you know, during our walkabout in all of that destruction, you know, businesses were not just looted, they were burnt down completely in that town. And he said to us that other than it being very well planned, in his opinion and view, because vehicles came to Nongoma from as far afield as towns such as Ngandla, which is in another district, from Newcastle to go and loot in Nongoma, which is, you know, some 150, 180 kilometers away. Vehicles from Newcastle were found there. And, you know, when we walked about in that town, you know, you would see certain signs of, you know, organization. You don't, you know, ATMs, the way they were looted, or no, I shouldn't say looted, the way they were broken into required heavy machinery. You needed angle grinders, you needed time, you needed planning. So it wasn't just like an ATM was ripped out of the wall and taken away. They went in and did a proper bank robbery type of thing. You know, they cut through, you know, probably an inch of reinforced metal to get into to the back of those ATMs and robbed a lot of them. Now, there are consequences of all this. So what we found in a town like that, where those that are dependent on social grants would go to the shops and draw their money out, or to those ATMs and draw their money, all of this would not be possible in the town of Nongoma. So what would happen is that the only neighboring towns that people would be able to go to were Pongola and Freyheit. The other surrounding towns were completely destroyed. And interestingly, the mayor of Nongoma gave quite a bit of credit to those two towns and the farming communities of those towns. And he said that had it not been for the communities and the farmers that stood up in the way that they did, those towns would have been equally destroyed when all of this mayhem and looting. So this is just our observation in that town alone. Mm-hmm. Newcastle itself, rather safe town. The town itself, you know, if we divide the town into east and west, the west of Newcastle, the town itself, community stood up shoulder to shoulder, you know, and took control of the town because the police again were totally feckless and protected the town. But I went into Newcastle East, if I may call it that. And I found that, you know, the malls were destroyed, shops owned by foreign nationals were destroyed. Some, interestingly, I met some brothers there, and when I spoke to them, they said to me, look, the only way that their shops didn't get looted was they rallied their neighbors around the shops, paid them to stand guard at their shops and protect their shops, and where it was possible, it was possible. So some of them were spared in that way. Others were completely gutted, looted, you know, in some way even razed to the ground. So that is what I found there. We went to Pongola. Pongola was the town itself, and even the outlying areas of Pongola were rather safe. There was no obvious sign of any looting or destruction. The other thing is that because there is a military base in and around that area, there was a quick deployment of personnel and troops, and so they were already manning roadblocks, which we passed through on our way there. So that was very visible and obvious. Dundee, I didn't notice. You know, Dundee, when I drove through Dundee and you know, entering through the more rural areas, Dundee was a town that appeared like as if, you know, just nothing had happened. There were no checkpoints. There were no shops looted that I saw. Everything appeared, you know, people, the hustle and bustle of Dundee was as if, you know, it was untouched. Ladysmith, when I got there, it was quite late. It was in the evening, actually. I just drove through the town, you know, a little. Some foreign nationals at what they call the plaza were attacked. I did notice a couple of patrol vehicles, but there were no entry and exit points to the town that were barricaded or blocked off. Ladysmith also has a military base, you know, from where, a huge military base, actually, from where troops can be easily deployed. So I don't know if that at all was a deterrent, but I didn't notice anything obvious in the town itself. And those were just my personal observations of all of these areas. So, you know, we've raised all of these things through government structures. Our observations have all been noted. And in fact, the provincial legislature, in terms of the premier himself, he tabled what is called an executive statement outlining his version of what he thinks was happening in the province. And of course, the entire executive statement was debated on Thursday in the legislature. The Democratic Alliance in KwaZulu-Natal, that's my leader in the province, Francois Rogers, you know, has summed up the reaction of the premier. And I say this because it is our belief that this is a factional fight of the ANC that spilled onto the streets. And so he made a call because the premier is the chairperson of the ANC in the province. You know, during that entire week, he and his government were probably watching from somewhere or hiding somewhere, but didn't come out. You know, if they did make an appearance, it was very, how shall I say, it was a very coward appearance. So the call is obvious that, you know, you were unable to protect the citizens of the province. It is a factional fight of your own political party that spilled onto the streets of the province and elsewhere. And the right thing for the Premier to do was a call that we made, is that since you cannot lead the province and you've shown it, resign. That is in summary, Brother Ibrahim.
So going forward, the oversight role that you're playing, I saw a lot of talk in the Sunday papers today to this idea of if the country has to move forward, we really need the best in terms of leadership to be brought on, because clearly this is not being offered within the ANC structures. The question is, you've obviously done an excellent job in terms of pointing out what is wrong and the inefficiencies. Do you feel, and again, this is not about any opposition party, it's about the perpetrators themselves and them taking responsibility, but I'm asking you in terms of, everybody trying to salvage what is left and trying to move forward, do you feel that the role that you're playing is one that will engender a positive change? Obviously, one type of change can occur at the polls, but if one is in opposition, that's the democratic dispensation, and that's what the voters have chosen for. Once you're in a position of opposition, what role can you play, which will not be classified just as politicking, but in some way can pull us away from the abyss?
Look, when we tell people to go to the polls and make the change, that is not just politicking. This is actually now what we've experienced. So it's not, I've always said to people that, if I can use the metaphor, I've always said, and I often do these things in closed discussions that we sit and have with people, because we are on the front line of politics. And I always use the metaphor, and I'm now doing it publicly on radio and unashamedly so. I always use the frog in the pot mentality metaphor. I say, if you take a frog and you put him in the pot and you put him in water and put the fire on underneath him, he will always sit there and he'll adjust his body temperature as the water warms without realizing that, there's a fire under me. And, I'm going to get cooked in this thing. Until such time as the temperature becomes, so hot and the water starts boiling, then it's too late to jump out. And very often, when you speak to people, they have all kinds of other stories. But when we tell them that, look here, we need to get rid of this government through the polls, that is the real thing that needs to be done. And that's not just politicking, that's the reality of the situation. So in as much as we might make suggestions to government to say that, look here, I sit on the education portfolio, so I can tell you that, look, currently there are approximately 150 schools that were affected by this. So when we tell them, and we were telling them for a long time, that look here, there needs to be contingency plans for disasters, storms, you need to budget, you need to do this. These are things that we've been telling them. But, it appears that, some things they listen. I'm not saying they don't. Government listens to things, many things that we put on the table. But very often when we put these tangible things on the table, they themselves play politics. They'll tell you, in fact, the MEC, when I put solutions on the table on how the provincial education department can save money, he quoted from Hamlet and called me an old spirit of apartheid eventually. That was his response to me. So when we're putting solutions on the table to say, this is what we are doing, where we govern, to save our Department of Education money and other departments' money, the Department of Transport and so on and so on, and money that can be used to be plowed back into services, this is what you can do, and this is what we are doing where we govern. Not to say that is, of course, a perfect government, I must admit. There are shortcomings where we govern as well. But when we have solutions and we want to share those solutions with you, don't politic with those solutions. Take those solutions seriously. Take them and use them. We want to share them. So where we are doing well, we want to share it. And it's not like we're not governing a province. We know the challenges. We have the same problems in the province where we govern when it comes to money, as KwaZulu-Natal has, for example, or Gauteng, or any province. But it is how those funds and budgets are allocated and managed that needs to be shared with the provincial government here in KwaZulu-Natal, for example. And it is those experiences that we learn from our own government, where we know we are getting things done and where we know things are governed better. We want to share it with you, but they'll tell us we are spirits of apartheid, you know, you're a racist, don't come and tell us your stories, we don't want to hear anything from you. They will sit at the ministerial level, the ministerial committee level, the MINMEC, which they call, where the MECs and ministers get together. There, sometimes, fortunately, they will listen to each other and exchange ideas. But when it comes back here, we're telling them, look, I can see that the school, you know, there's a principal stealing money, or that hospital where the CEO is crooked, or that doctor is supposed to be in the hospital but he's working in the private sector. When we make these things obvious to them, they don't listen. And if they do, well, Allah alam. But so in this entire process, we have been engaging with them to say that, look, X, Y, and Z needs attention. So, for example, schools, we said to them that, look, this is what we need to do for schools. This is, these are the number of schools. This is, you need to get the fences sorted out. We told them that the SAPs and SANDF, we've engaged with them. Our own members of the Portfolio Committee on Defense engaged with the minister at the time. It resulted in, you know, thousands of more boots coming onto the ground. These were engagements that we had behind the scenes. Everything is not made public. You know, then we said to them, for example, after this looting crisis, through our oversight role, we found there was a massive impact on the environment, for example. So massive areas of pollution, chemicals that leaked into rivers and streams and water supplies. All of these things are things that the different members of our caucus in the different portfolios and through their different oversights have made observations that are particular to them. I would have made those on schools. My friend or colleague, Rishikan Virana, Dr. Virana, would have made on health and Heinz de Boer, so on environment and so on. These are our observations because these are our focus areas. We take it back to government and we say, listen here, not only are we telling you that these are our observations, but these are also our solutions. Where we can offer you a solution. Where we can't offer a solution, well, we are all in the same boat in those regards. But these are things that we have seen coming for some time. And I can tell you this much, that this is not the end. This is a taste of probably more that might be coming. In fact, I was listening to an interview by the former statistician general, Pali Lekhohla. He said something very interesting, if I may use that word. And it's something that should worry every South African when you hear something like this. He said that South Africa is on a predetermined trajectory towards what might be a Sudan. I'm not quoting his exact words, but the predetermined trajectory was his exact words. And the Sudan was his example. We might not reach that stage, but if we do not smell the coffee now, we do not go as citizens and wake up and make that change, then what we are going to be on is that predetermined trajectory. Because the state coffers are being looted left, right, and center. And until such time as that cannot be voted out, then that predetermined trajectory, the signs and symptoms, if I may use a medical analogy or healthcare analogy, are all there. Well, the writing is on the wall. Write it and read it later. We need to make that change. And it's up to every single one of us. And you know, you rightly said I'm a politician. Problem is, on election day, people are having a bribe because it's a public holiday and people are visiting. Doesn't take long. Go cast your vote. Get rid of the corruption. And then, inshallah, we might be on another trajectory if Allah wills. Everything is in the hands of Allah. We have complete yaqeen in that. But Allah Ta'ala has given us a responsibility, and we must exercise that responsibility.
Dr. Imran Kika, thank you so much for your time. And I think most worrying in all of this is what you sketched at the outset, how deeply Small towns across Northern Natal have been affected, and you know, picking up the pieces for at these particular towns going to be a nightmare. I think we've only seen a part of that picture thus far, and the real impact is yet to be felt, unfortunately, for many, many people in these towns who are most vulnerable. We'll keep an eye on the situation and keep in touch with you as well. Shukran for your time. Assalamu alaikum.
Brother Ibrahim, just a quick note. On Tuesday and Wednesday, we will all, as members of the legislature, be visiting schools across every district in the province. So Allah will be able to give you some feedback from the damaged schools as well.
Indeed, we will keep our pulse on that as well and be in touch with you. Shukran for your time, Imran, and assalamu alaikum.